Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Welcome to the Friday program. Thanks for tuning in. We only have one soundbite for you tonight, and it is the back and forth between Arlen Specter and this filthy Attorney General we have, where the Attorney General is trying to convince Arlen Specter and anyone else who might be listening that there is no constitutional guarantee to the right of habeas corpus. In other words, habeas corpus, loosely translated, or loosely defined, I should say, simply means that when you are charged with a crime, it has to be a real crime you're being charged with, and it can't be, A, something made up, B, well, that's B, A, something that is outside the boundaries of the Constitution of the United States. Habeas corpus is found in common law. It goes back several centuries. But the Bush crime family, well, you'll hear it in a second. My good friend Will Rivers Pitt will join us at the bottom of the next hour to discuss his latest book, House of Ill Repute. House of Ill Repute. That'll be fun. And we're going to do a lot of phone calls tonight, too, because it is Friday night. I'll tell you what, let's start with the Arlen Specter. This is from yesterday. The Senate Judiciary hearing, and I want you to hear this. Arlen Specter and this filthy Attorney General go back and forth on the Bush crime family's attitude to the Constitution. Now, this is what Bush calls that goddamn piece of paper. Those are his words. Quote, that goddamn piece of paper. That's a legitimate quote that Bush made about the U.S. Constitution. But as it relates to all the people that we have illegally detained in our prison camp in Guantanamo, Cuba, and God knows where else. But how do these neoconservative thugs figure they can totally ignore the constitutional right contained within habeas corpus, which, again, states that all persons are guaranteed protection against things like indefinite detention without legal representation and so on and so forth? So I want you to hear this. This is Arlen Specter and the filthy Attorney General of the United States. Well, we'll have it in a second. You ready?
You have the Constitution having an explicit provision that the writ of habeas corpus cannot be suspended except for rebellion or invasion. And you have the Supreme Court saying that habeas corpus rights apply to Guantanamo detainees. How can there be a statutory taking of habeas corpus when there's an express constitutional provision that it can't be suspended, and an explicit Supreme Court holding that it applies to Guantanamo alien detainees?
A couple of things, Senator. I believe that the Supreme Court case you're referring to dealt only with the statutory right to habeas, not the constitutional right to habeas.
Well, you're not right about that. It's plain on its face. They're talking about the constitutional right to habeas corpus. They talk about habeas corpus being guaranteed by the Constitution, except in cases of invasion and rebellion.
Sir, the fact that they may have talked about the constitutional right to habeas doesn't mean that the decision dealt with the constitutional right to habeas.
When did you last read the case?
It has been a while, but I'd be happy to go back. I will go back and look at it.
Yesterday and this morning again.
I will go back and look at it. But it's never been the case. I'm not aware of a Supreme
Court. Wait a minute. The Constitution says you can't take it away, except in case of rebellion or invasion?
The fact that the Constitution, again, there is no express grant of habeas in the Constitution. There's a prohibition against taking it away. But it's never been the case. I'm not aware of a Supreme
Court. Wait a minute. The Constitution says you can't take it away, except in case of rebellion or invasion? Doesn't that mean you have the right of habeas corpus unless there's an invasion or rebellion?
I meant by that comment, the Constitution doesn't say every individual in the United States or every citizen is hereby granted or assured the right to habeas. It doesn't say that.
My God. This Gonzalez is either the most evil little snake ever to get a law license or the most ignorant little savage ever to worm his way up through the Republican Party. I've never seen anyone like Gonzalez. There's no constitutional right to habeas corpus. One of the foundations of practically any civilized country, you have to be able to defend yourself when you are unless it's a dictatorship. You have to be able to defend yourself against the charges against you. You have to know what the charges are. The charges have to be basically within the framework of the law. Now, this comes, his testimony comes partly because the Pentagon has set out rules yesterday for detainee trials. Those people that the Bush thugs have scooped up, God only knows where they've been picked up. Pakistan, Afghanistan, England, Canada, Australia. We don't know. We don't know anything about them. But the new rules set out by the Pentagon says that these suspects can be convicted and executed based on hearsay testimony and coerced statements. In other words, if I don't know how to put this. If you have a child and I'm one of the interrogators and I want information from you that I'm going to use to put someone else on trial, and you say, you're out of your mind, I don't know anything about Abe Snake being a terrorist, and I say, okay, I have your 10-year-old in the next room, and I'm going to torture your 10-year-old until you tell me what I want to hear. And you say, are you out of your mind? So I start torturing your 10-year-old. How long will it take you to say, okay, what do you want me to say? And then I say, okay, I want you to tell me that Abdul in the next room is a terrorist. He's a terrorist! Okay, thank you. Now I can go to court with that testimony based on these new Pentagon rules. Can you believe this? Can you believe this? Now the Pentagon says those rules are fair. No problem. Democrats say they will hold hearings and take a look at this. And human rights organizations complain that the regulations would allow evidence that would not be tolerated in civilian or even military courtrooms. But what Bush and Gonzalez and the Pentagon and the NSA and the neocons and Poindexter and Abrams and all these filthy rats have set up is a third system of prosecution. We have two essentially in this country, civilian and military. These rat bastards have come up with a third one, where no rules apply, nothing that a civilized human being would consider fair or applicable. Anything they want to do, they've decided they can do. Now, who's going to stop them? The Supreme Court. You heard Specter saying the Supreme Court has already ruled. And Specter's a former federal prosecutor. The Supreme Court has already ruled You can't do this, even with detainees. So Bush got these filthy lumps of DNA of Republicans in the Congress to write legislation that Bush then attached a signing statement to that worked its way through this and that and came out with the Pentagon a directive that says, no, we can do anything we goddamn want to do. We can do anything we feel like doing. If we want to torture somebody, get testimony, we'll do it. Habeas corpus, get out of here. Hearsay evidence. Now, you know what hearsay is. You know, when someone's on trial, the only evidence that is admissible is evidence that the person testifying has firsthand knowledge of. I can't go on the stand and say, yeah, I know that person's guilty because my friend told me he committed the murder. That's bull. You can't do that's hearsay evidence. It's not admissible. It'll be stricken from the record. It'll be objected to by the defense, and the judge will sustain the objection. But what they're saying is that sort of evidence can be used. Hearsay, no habeas corpus, testimony gotten through torture. And the result can be the execution of people who are utterly, absolutely, totally innocent. Think about this. Now, you may say to yourself, well, I don't give a damn about the people in Guantanamo. How about the people in Chicago or Detroit or Denver or San Francisco? Or how about you?
Help us, help us, help us. Help us, help us, help us.
No American will be allowed to torture another human being anywhere in the world.
Oh, you little lying, two-faced bastard. God, you belong in prison. Now, back to this Pentagon thing that was released yesterday. And further evidence of turning this country into a militaristic dictatorship. According to the manual, and it's a 238-page manual put out by the Pentagon, a detainee's lawyer trying to defend someone who's been sucked up by the vacuum sweeper that is this filthy Bush crime family. The person that, how long have we been holding people at Guantanamo now? 4 years? No representation, no charges, no trial, nothing. Torture, deprivation. The manual says a detainee's lawyer could not reveal classified evidence in the person's defense until the government has a chance to review it. Suspects would be allowed to view summaries of classified evidence, not the material itself. How do you defend yourself against charges when you're not allowed to see what the charges are? How do you do that? Well, you don't. This is Soviet style. This is even in the darkest days of the Third Reich, except for the targeted populations, there was still a legal system. Now, it didn't exist for the Jews and the homosexuals and the gypsies and certain other groups. Of course not. But they still had a judicial system. The Soviet Union, this is a Stalinist model. This is unbelievable. This is why this rat bastard and his entire group has to be impeached. Who is Pelosi and Reid? Who are they kidding? Do they think they're going to be immune from this? Or do they think they are immune from it and it's only us, the citizens, who are going to have to suffer? The new regulations, including this stuff about coerced or hearsay evidence, are intended to track the law that was passed last fall by Congress that restored Bush's plans to have these special military commissions try the prisoners. The commissions had been struck down earlier last year by the Supreme Court, remember? But that doesn't stop Bush. That doesn't stop these filthy Republicans, these subhumans like Mitch McConnell and the rest of these thugs. They don't care about constitutional protections. The Constitution to them is the same as it is to Bush, a goddamn piece of paper. That's all it is. That's his quote. Now, at a Pentagon briefing yesterday, Dan Delorto, deputy to the Defense Department's top attorney, said these new rules will, now get this, quote, afford all the judicial guarantees which are recognized as indispensable by civilized people, end quote. That's what the rat bastard says. Do you see what they do? There must be instructions handed down by Cheney or Rumsfeld or Bush or whoever. Negroponte, Abrams, Poindexter, somebody is saying, look, just go out there and say, regarding this, that the new rules give everybody all the protection that that they are constitutionally guaranteed, recognized as indispensable by civilized people, even though we know it is an absolute lie. It doesn't matter to these people. They lied us into a war. They lie about everything, every single thing. Only the way they do it, with the facts staring them right in the face, they still lie. They look right into the camera or right at the reporter, like this piece of human waste, this Dan Delorto, deputy to the Defense Department's top counsel. And he says, oh, no, 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 these new rules will afford all the judicial guarantees which are recognized as indispensable by civilized people, end quote. Son of a bitch. This is unbelievable, isn't it? Elisa Massimino, who's the Washington director of Human Rights First, says, quote, no civilized nation permits convictions to rest on coerced evidence, and reliance on such evidence has never been acceptable in military or civilian courts in this country, end quote. That's right. Never. Never. Until now. And there's still 30% of the population in this country supports Bush? Those 30% should be rounded up and sent, I don't know, sent someplace where there's a dictatorship already in place. Because you 30% are doing your goddamnedest to enable this thug to destroy us. Oh, man. No civilized nation permits convictions to rest on coerced evidence, and reliance on such evidence has never been acceptable in military or civilian courts in this country until now.
FISA law was written in 1978. We're having a discussion in 2006. It's a different world.
Yeah, that old stuff doesn't count. My God, the other parts of the Bible, chuckle nuts, were written 3,000 years ago. What we're talking about here for the moment is the new Pentagon manual, 238-page manual that says torture and hearsay testimony can be used to convict people and sentence them to death. No constitutional guarantees whatsoever. This goes beyond canceling the canceling the Constitution. I mean, we're the only country that has the American, or the United States Constitution, duh. This goes way beyond canceling the Constitution. This cancels common law. This goes back. This cancels law that has been in effect. I don't know. Some of this, I guess, for thousands of years, at least hundreds of years. And these filthy pigs in the Bush administration just said, no, we're just going to do away with that. Now, Mary in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, sent me an email, and it's kind of interesting. She points out something. Remember yesterday when we played all the sound of Gonzalez, and he stumbled and fumbled and kept tripping over his tongue, couldn't answer, wouldn't answer. You know what the reason was? And Mary points this out. Pat Leahy did swear in Gonzalez, unlike Arlen Specter. When the last time Gonzalez appeared before the Judiciary Committee, when Specter was the chairman, he didn't swear him in. He didn't put him under oath. Specter didn't. A former prosecutor, a pig like Specter, regardless of the fact that Specter is questioning this filthy little man on habeas corpus, Specter is a sneak and a liar and a cheat. He ought to be defeated. There ought to be a Democrat in Pennsylvania that can run his ass out of town. But Specter didn't put him under oath. Pat Leahy did. And that's the difference between the two testimonies. The last time this piece of human waste, Gonzalez, appeared before the Judiciary Committee, his answers were just smooth as butter. This time, he stumbled all over himself, and the difference was being sworn in. Now, back to this this defense, this Pentagon manual, 238-page manual. This is put together by Rumsfeld. This is one of Rumsfeld's legacies. Rumsfeld, who would squat over the U.S. Constitution and defecate on it, just like all of these people. They don't care about the Constitution. It's nonsense to them. Cheney, Bush, Rumsfeld, Gonzalez, it's a joke. The last September, Congress, which was led by the Republicans back there, several months ago, sent Bush a new law that tried to bypass some of the Supreme Court rulings, and the law granted wide latitude to Bush in setting the standards for interrogation and detaining so-called enemy combatants, a term that exists nowhere except within the filth of this Bush administration. That's the only place you will ever find that term, enemy combatants, as a legal term. Now, the legislation given to this pig by the Republicans granted the pig leeway to decide which interrogation techniques were permissible. They turned that power over to Bush. Can you believe that? Now, in outlining in this manual, in outlining the maximum punishment for various acts here, the new manual includes the death penalty for people convicted of spying or taking part in what is called a conspiracy or joint enterprise that kills someone. Now, do you want to interpret how far-reaching a conspiracy? I mean, Jesus God, if I'm talking to someone here in Atlanta about the Bush administration and how filthy it is, and that person talks to a friend in New York, and that person talks to a friend in the Middle East, and that person talks to a friend who happens to be connected to maybe a Sunni or Shia insurgent group in Iraq, and that person gets involved in setting off an IED that kills 30 Iraqi citizens, then you work back the chain. You only have to come back 4 or 5 steps to get me, and I can be tried and sentenced to death. Or you can. The maximum penalty for aiding the enemy is life imprisonment in a federal lockdown. See, the prison industrial complex and the military industrial complex loves this. Oh, Jesus Christ. They all get, it's almost like sexual arousal. Oh, my God, this war will go on forever. People in prison, new weaponry. Oh, my God, look what the Chinese did. We'll get to that in a minute. Oh, my God, we can start a space weapons race now. The manual prohibits the use of statements obtained through torture and what is referred to as cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment as prohibited by the Constitution. But it allows evidence obtained through torture techniques if it was obtained through torture techniques prior to December 30th, 2005. Can you freaking believe that? It states in there. Coercive technique is what they use. Coercive, which is torture. Okay, no more torture unless... no evidence got from torture unless it was gotten before December 30th, 2005. Then it's okay. What the hell does this mean? Now, you don't expect this Pentagon, this administration, these criminals to really abide by their own rule. Of course not. As long as the statement under torture was ripped from somebody's mind before December 2005. Holy Christ. I tell you, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid better seize the moment. They better carpe diem, seize the day. They better do it. Now, one kind of just let me insert this. You all are familiar with the appeal for redress that hundreds of active U.S. military personnel from E1s all the way up to O6s have signed this petition to Congress for it's a petition for redress of grievances. You know, part of that stupid ass First Amendment. That is that the First Amendment? Yeah, I think it's the First Amendment. You know, stupid-ass First Amendment that the Bush crime family will go after next. They've already gone after part of it. They'll go after the rest of it. The right to petition the government for redress of grievances. And that's open to active-duty military personnel, and they are protected by the law. Hundreds upon hundreds of active-duty soldiers and Marines have signed, and Navy people and Air Force people have signed this petition. 60 Minutes, CBS's 60 Minutes, was going to do a program about it. They interviewed Ron Cantu and other active duty soldiers who were challenging the war with the appeal for redress. Twice, CBS 60 Minutes has canceled it. They keep pushing it back, pushing it back, pushing it back. They're refusing to put the story out there. 60 Minutes is the great investigative a chunk of journalism still left in American television. Let me give you the phone number of CBS so that you can call them, perhaps, and tell them you would like to see the segment with Ron Cantu, the appeal for redress that the American soldiers have at risk to their careers, at risk to their safety, have put together. You got something to write with? I'm only going to give it once, all right? The main number for CBS, CBS News in New York, it's 212-975-4321. 212-975-4321. 212-975-4321. Or you can go to afterdowningstreet.org and the story is there. And there's also an email address if you want to go to afterdowningstreet.org. There's an email address to email 60 Minutes. But the phone number, the main number for CBS News in New York, 212-975-4321. Now, if you go to afterdowningstreet.org, there's other numbers that you can call to let them know how you feel, to let CBS know, and to let 60 Minutes know, you know, Mike Wallace, let them know how you feel about the refusal of CBS 60 Minutes to air this segment. They being the Bush subhumans are really taking us into a military dictatorship. We can't let this happen, Truth Seeker. We just can't. January 27th in D.C. will be the first, and other cities around the country will be the first really intense day of demonstrations to overthrow this government legally and peacefully.
The Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Well, don't you wish each time somebody listened to right-wing radio, God would kill a Republican? Oh, don't say that, Mike. Ben writes in, if Gonzalez thinks there is no right to habeas corpus, then we can arrest and detain for life all members of this administration once we have a Democratic president. And maybe we should. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. These people must be planning on never relinquishing power. Do you suppose that that's a plan? That an invasion of Iran and a declaration of martial law and the firing of all these attorneys general, or I'm sorry, federal attorneys around the country. I mean, if you really want to get paranoid and conspiratorial, wouldn't that, I mean, why else would Gonzalez, an attorney general of the United States, argue before a committee of the United States Senate, the Judiciary Committee? Look, there's no guarantee of habeas corpus. We can use coerced, tortured out testimony. People accused of crimes don't have a right to see the evidence against them. And on and on and on, unless... And Prairie 2 writes, hey, Mike, it's apparent why they're replacing principled and effective federal district attorneys with Republican Party hacks. They intend to start filling those detention camps Kellogg, Brown, and Root has been building. They don't want that pesky habeas corpus getting in the way. After all, something 800 years old is just a fad. I mean, if you wanted to get nervous, wouldn't this be a good time to get nervous? The other thing that there's so many things again today that just made me go ballistic. But this thing about the Chinese, they have done something that the United States and the Soviet Union did 25 years ago. They've developed technology now, rocket technology, to knock a satellite out of orbit. You know, I think it was back in August of 2005. 160 nations at the UN voted to ban space weapons. Only one nation voted no. They wouldn't go along. Who do you think that was? That's right. It was Bush. Bush crime family. So China carries out this first test of an anti-satellite weapon. And that lets the world know that it's going to play a major role in military space activities. Well, why not? Why not? Arms control experts say, well, this could be the start of an inner space arms race. Well, of course. Either that, or it could be an effort by China to get the Bush murderers to negotiate into negotiations on a weapons ban, which Bush won't do. White House officials, quote, expressed our concern regarding this action by the Chinese, end quote. But it's Bush. The Bush administration that says no to a global treaty banning these kinds of tests. Why? Because the Bush killers say they need freedom of action in space. And do they really think that the Chinese are going to say, oh, okay, you go ahead. You go ahead. We'll sit back here on our asses. But you guys go ahead and develop all the space weapons you want to develop and all the spy satellites you want to develop. We'll just let you do it. Really? Are they that stupid? The Bush crime family. I think they are. The Times has it this way. The weather satellite hit by the weapon had circled the globe at an altitude of roughly 500 miles. In theory, the test means that China can now hit American spy satellites, which orbit closer to Earth. The satellites presumably in range of the Chinese missile include most of the imagery satellites used for basic military reconnaissance. that's spying, which are essentially the eyes of the American intelligence community for military movements, potential nuclear tests, and even some counterterrorism. Oh, horse crap. In late August of this year, President Bush authorized a new national space policy that ignored calls for a global prohibition on such tests. The policy said the Bush administration would, quote, preserve its rights, the rights of the United States, our capabilities and our freedom of action in space, and dissuade or deter others from either impeding those rights or developing capabilities of their own. The declaration by the Bush crime family also said the United States would, quote, deny, if necessary, adversaries the use of space capabilities hostile to U.S. national interests, end quote. See, just like we're telling the Iranians that we are going to attack them because the lie is, and we may have something for you next hour from Seymour Hersh, who's being interviewed by Wolf Blitzer. And in this interview, Seymour Hersh, who has the pulse of this sort of stuff, it tries to explain to Wolf Blitzer that the Iranians don't even have a nuclear weapons program. Depends on who you want to believe, right? Now, the director for the Center for Defense Information, a private group in Washington that tracks military programs, says the Chinese test could be a shot across our bow. The spokeswoman said for several years the Russians and Chinese have been trying to push a treaty to ban space weapons. The concept of exhibiting a hard power capability, that's what the Chinese did last week, to bring somebody to the negotiating table is a classic Cold War technique. Yeah. Gary Seymour, the director of studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, said in an interview, quote, I think it makes perfect sense for the Chinese to do this, both for deterrence and to hedge their bets. It puts pressure on the U.S. to negotiate agreements not to weaponize space, end quote. Now, the White House statement released in the past couple of days, issued by the National Security Council, said China's, quote, development and testing of such weapons is inconsistent with the spirit of cooperation that both countries aspire to in the civil space area, end quote. See what I mean? They stand there and lie right to your face. The Bush thugs do not aspire to any sort of spirit of cooperation. So all this, you know, hand-wringing and whining today about the Chinese, or yesterday and today about the Chinese test, just remember, the Bush murderers, the Bush incompetent rat bastards have absolutely said, no, we're going to weaponize space, but nobody else can. Oh, really? You think so, George? Jesus. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Somebody, I'm going to have to make an appeal here. Somebody sent me the video, and apparently I have either deleted it or lost it. I looked at it earlier this evening. It's an interview between conducted by Wolf Blitzer in his little toy situation room, talking with Seymour Hersh, where Hersh talks about Iran is not a threat, and Seymour Hersh, who has probably, he's the one journalist in the country right now, Seymour Hersh, who has an absolute inside track to the intelligence community and the decent people still left in the Pentagon. And, of course, Seymour Hersh has been writing for The New Yorker. But whoever sent me that link, if you happen to be listening, Jesus, would you please send it again? It's a back and forth, and I think it runs a couple, 3 minutes between Wolf Blitzer and Seymour Hersh. And if you can send me the link, we'll play it. Okay, there's an email here I want to share with you. Don't forget, coming up here in about 25 minutes, we're going to have Will Rivers Pitt talking about his new book, House of Ill Repute, Reflections on War, Lies, and America's Ravaged Reputation. And it's paperback, and you ought to buy this. How much is it? It's under $15. We're going to talk with Will. This is from Pam. Pam wrote in tonight. She said, Mike, I'm glad to see on the upcoming shows portion of your website for tonight that you are commenting more fully on Nancy Pelosi's statement regarding cutting off funding to troops in Iraq. I'm imagining you may have seen the same article I did on Raw Story or a similar source. I'm no apologist for Pelosi. However, I think it's crucial that the blame for the convoluted way in which she must go about working and speaking to Congress and the public, that the blame be put squarely where it belongs, as you said, on the evil, evil men who plot in every possible way to distort and trash the Democrats in the eyes of the public in an effort to maintain control and power. I'm not so naive, Pam writes, as to think the Democrats don't have their own large problems, but I would hope that before attacking Pelosi so quickly, as you seemed to do last night on your show, you would try to think through more of the full picture. The last thing we need, in my opinion, is to turn Democrats on each other in a way which allows the neocons to get more of a foothold. The point is to try to pull this democracy back from the brink of extinction. And to do this, folks in the Democratic Party, as well as other informed voters, need to hang together at least enough to defeat the continued crazed legislation and amendments proposed by the right wing and push forward crucial legislation proposed by those who at least retain some sanity. My sense is that if Pelosi would have declared she'd start with impeachment as the first item on the Democrats' agenda, or stated immediately that she wouldn't fund the so-called escalation, she and the Democrats would have been swift-boated so fast by the Republican framing and propaganda machine that it would make your head spin. I think a person in her position needs to think very carefully about how and when to push and when to hold off for a short while to obtain the ultimate objective of getting the troops home as quickly and safely as possible and ending this unconscionable war against innocent people. Let the crazies who want to continue this war hang themselves and be seen as who they are for wanting to send more troops against all advice into a useless, costly abyss, rather than allowing them to frame the issue as, Democrats don't want to support our troops. Bush needs to feel the pressure and public opinion of this country and as many in his own party as we can win over against him. And for that to happen, Pelosi needs to find a way in which Democrats, independents, and Republicans who fear for their political lives or still maintain some bit of sanity can stand together. I hope we'll give her at least a little time to attempt this before we go into full attack mode. Pam. First of all, I don't think that what I was doing last night was attacking Nancy Pelosi. I'm so on the verge of a complete mental collapse anyway. It may have sounded that way. I've been driven close, borderline insane by the Bush crime family over the past 6 years. I'll freely admit that. But I don't think I was attacking Pelosi. If it came across as an attack on Pelosi, I regret that and apologize for it. I thought what I was doing was attacking her statement. And there is a difference. There definitely is a difference. Attacking her statement and the leading Democrats in the Democratic Party who are saying they are not going to resist by putting a cap on funds or a cap on the number of troops in Iraq. They're not going to resist Bush as he pushes more Americans and consequently more Iraqis into the grave. Now, I find that unconscionable. I understand the political or the tactical argument of allow Nancy time to do this, allow Nancy time to do that. I understand that. I get that. But as far as impeachment is concerned, and I get the Swift voting, and I get the framing, and I really do, but they've already done that. You see, there's no stopping these filthy, degenerate Republicans. There's no stop. It doesn't make a difference. Nancy Pelosi can stand out there tomorrow and say, I fully support George Bush in his escalation of this war, and these rat bastards on the Republican side will say, well, she really doesn't mean it, and besides, why isn't she whipping the rest of these Democrats into line? So with Republicans as frothing at the mouth and spittle-laden and brain-ruptured as they are, there's no way. The only way you deal with a Republican effectively, there's two ways. Either totally acquiesce, or put your hands around their throats and start strangling until they finally say, okay, 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 I'll stop. There's no compromise with Republicans. Jesus Christ. Hasn't the Democratic Party learned that? And I base all this on, I go back to the confirmation hearings on John Roberts and Sammy the fish, Alito. How the Democrats and all the federal judges, neo-Nazis, that have been confirmed because the Democrats in the Senate refused to filibuster when they could have stopped it. And I remember hearing the Democrats say, well, we're going to wait until a bigger issue comes along. Well, you know, I checked out John Roberts. He's okay. You crazy bastards. What are you talking about, you leading Democrats? See, and I watched that. I watched that happen over 6 years, and I've had a belly full of it. So I'm not trying to attack Nancy Pelosi, per se. Or Harry Reid. I have to use their names because they're the two leaders. But the policies of the Democratic Party at this point are superseded and transcended by the dictates of the United States Constitution. George Bush should be impeached, removed from office, and then put on trial for crimes against humanity. Jesus Christ, why is that so hard for people to understand? I am sick to my guts. Not you, Pam, but with people who say, take it easy, back off, give them a little time. What? How much time do we want? The Republicans aren't taking a breather. The American public said, get out of town to the Republicans with your policies and your war in November. Have they gotten out of town? Hell no! They're writing manuals that say there's no such thing as denying... coerced, tortured testimony. You've got an attorney general showing up in front of the Senate yesterday saying habeas corpus is not a guarantee in the U.S. Constitution. So, am I to believe then that what we're supposed to do is give Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid some breathing time? Well, breathing time, my ass! They've been there. They've been there as long as Bush has been there. They know what's going on. They don't need breathing time. They need to do something. Something powerful. Something explicit. Something that says, no, you sons of bitches, you are not going to continue to destroy and corrupt and call the United States Constitution a goddamn piece of paper. You're not going to do it. The Democrats have had 6 years to get their plan together. Now, I'm certainly not yelling at you, Pam. I appreciate your email. But for people who keep saying this over and over again, for Christ's sake, what do you want to happen before you too will say, yes, Pelosi and Reid are the man, the son of a bitch, get out of office. What's it going to take, Truth Seeker?
If we raise our flag on a million graves, will we all be proud, or will we be ashamed of our leadership? Greedy and arrogant, and we'll all be judged by
by the choices, the choices that we made. We don't want a war.
You took an oath to defend our flag and our freedom, and you kept that oath under siege and under fire.
Oh, my God. Okay. We left somebody hanging on last night, and I want to get to him. Blake is calling from San Francisco. Blake sat there for an hour, and he sat there for an hour tonight. Hey, Blake.
Yeah, hey. You know, first of all, I want to thank you. You're doing great service to the nation.
But well, okay.
Speaking up. I've got four short paragraphs. I would ask you if you would let me read these four paragraphs before you comment on them. It's a historical background that ties in with what's going on right now. First part, these are short. It's from Eleanor and Franklin. It's a book about Eleanor and Franklin Roosevelt. Author is Joseph Lash. And it goes like this. The anti-Roosevelt underground campaign in 1940 was venomous, and Democratic Party Chair Ed Flynn accused the Republicans of conducting, quote, the most vicious, most shameful campaign since the time of Lincoln, unquote. Much of the abuse centered on Eleanor and the Roosevelt family, you know, like personal attacks.
Right.
Publicly, Eleanor brushed it off as routine mudslinging. Now, the next paragraph. This is written about the morning after the election in 1940 when Roosevelt defeated Wendell Willkie. It was not until 2:30 in the morning that the president was satisfied that the results would not be upset. As he prepared to go to bed, he made the startling goodnight observation, quote, "We seem to have averted a putsch," you know, like Munich beer hall putsch, you know, where, like,
right.
Hitler was first taken over. Okay. When his wife asked what he meant by that, he explained that he had received information that persons purporting to speak for Willkie and the German government had come to an agreement to compel Britain to make peace in return for which the United States would have unchallenged sovereignty in the Western Hemisphere. From all we hear, Eleanor later wrote, Lady Florence Willard, we realize now that Mr. Willkie was backed by forces which were a greater menace than many of us were willing to believe. There was a fascist tendency for an appeasement policy toward Germany which terrifies many of us and makes us feel that the decision of the Willkie backers to keep up their organization is none too good for the country, unquote. Okay, you know, saying that the Bushes are Nazis and the Republicans are Nazis is not just a figure of speech and not an exaggeration.
Right.
They are.
Yeah. There was a strong movement by Republicans and conservatives in this country that goes all the way back to, as you point out, back to the 30s for the United States, Great Britain, and Germany to form an alliance against the rest of the world. And you know, people like Henry Ford and... Charles Lindbergh.
Yeah.
It just goes on and on. People who were very much in favor of aligning with the Nazis. In the first place, it would have been a wonderful opportunity to impose fascism. The second place, it would have been... All these people were known anti-Semites. And I'm not using the term the way it's sometimes used against me because I criticize Israel. I mean, these were real anti-Semites.
Right.
This is long before Israel existed in the modern sense, in the political sense. And... They hated the Jews, and anything to do to murder all the Jews was okay with Lindbergh and Henry Ford and, I'm drawing a blank on some of the bankers.
Well, Ford wrote the book.
I think the Harriman family in New York, I may be wrong on that. So,
well, Harriman was part of the law firm that Prescott Bush was in, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, and here's the other good stuff, too. This brings it into the present. Willkie earned his law degree from Indiana University in 1916 and practiced law with his father before entering the U.S. Army during World War I. After the war, he entered corporate law practice, moving to New York City in 1929 to work in the legal department of Commonwealth and Southern Corporation. 4 years later, the dynamic lawyer was president of the huge utilities holding company. How where does that sound familiar from?
Yeah.
After 1933, he gained national prominence as leader of the battle of privately owned utilities against competition from the federal government's Tennessee Valley Authority, you know, the electrical project that brought electricity to all the poor, starving people, you know, who didn't have any food to eat to try to, you know, prop up the economy. Then, this asshole, then he went on, Wilkie went on to stress the need for a, quote,
oh, I'm sorry, Blake. Our producer had to cut you off right there because of that word. I don't know why we can't use that word, but we can't. I'm sorry, but we got the gist of what you were trying to say. We'll be back after the break with Will Rivers Pitt. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Subliminable messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
Let me read to you what Congressman John Conyers Jr. has written on the back of, or for the back of Will Rivers Pitt's new book. Congressman Conyers writes, in this volume, Will Pitt continues to show us why he's one of the foremost progressive essayists of our time. In prose that is striking and often lyrical, Pitt paints a vivid picture of the dangerous and disturbing times in which we are living and casts a bright light on the often illegal conduct of this administration. Despite this, Pitt never fails to remind us that there's hope and that the power to create change is ours. And joining us now is former drinking buddy of mine. Well, I don't know that that's the right way to put it, is it, Will? But Will Rivers Pitt. Hey, Will.
It is so good to talk to you again, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I have to tell you that so many of the essays in your book, of course, I've read, and I think a lot of people have, but to have them all in one place in one volume is really a treat, and I'm real glad you have come out with this.
Well, thank you. It's a sort of a double-barreled concept here. I think one of the things that concerns me about writing only for an online audience is the tendency to spend a great deal of time talking to people about things that they already know.
Right.
By putting it all together in a book, I am hopeful will broaden an audience that needs to kind of be brought inside with this particular information.
Yeah, that's a good point. And again, I've mentioned it tonight, but for people listening, the title is House of Ill Repute, Reflections on War, Lies, and America's Ravaged Reputation. And the foreword to this book is written by Cindy Shand. The author, of course, is William Rivers Pitt. And it's put out by Polypoint Press. The list price is only, it's under $15. And you should get this. For people who, at truthout.org, at Democratic Underground, all over the Internet, who are very familiar with Will's writings, you make a good point, Will. When you are only writing or writing primarily online, it's a little bit difficult sometimes for people outside that community, although it's huge.
I don't have enough fingers and toes to count the times I've gone to do a talk, and I come out with something about, like, the Project for New American Century, even 2 or 3 years ago, and everybody in the room is nodding their head.
Right,
and
exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's gratifying to go and listen to someone who confirms some of the facts that you've suspected.
Yeah.
But in this day and age, I think it's really important to try to talk to people who aren't aware of a lot of this stuff, who think that MSNBC is giving them the information that they need, you know?
Yeah, right. Oh, God, don't even get me started. You and I met in D.C. prior to this hideous war. MATCOM was there,
mm-hmm.
and oh my God, Ben Birch and you, and
all your bureau chiefs.
Oh my God, we had such a crowd there.
Yep.
And I'm just wondering, I haven't decided yet whether or not I'm going to go to D.C. on the 27th, and the reason for it is, you know, I'm working now,
mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, are you going to go?
I'm going to try. It's not a big leap from Boston to Washington, D.C. I would be a fool not to go, but I got to check the finances and see what's what. But, yeah, I think I'm pretty sure that I'm going.
Well, if you could get some book royalty checks in between that, well, that's only a week and a half away.
Yeah, right? It doesn't work like that, unfortunately.
It doesn't work like that at all. talk to the audience here about just what we've seen in the past couple of days with this testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee. I've spent the past hour talking about Gonzalez saying that habeas corpus is not a constitutional guarantee. The questioning by Patrick Leahy about sending Mr. Arar to Syria, knowing full well that he would be tortured there rather than sending him back to Canada. Jesus, I'll tell you, I don't think any of us realized back in the winter of 2002-2003 just how mad this group of thugs really is.
Well, I grew up in a family of lawyers. My mother and father were lawyers, and there was a small kernel inside of me that felt bad for Gonzalez the other day, because a lot of the times the lawyers don't necessarily get to choose what legal arguments they're going to make.
Uh-huh.
And he had to get up and say, there's no guarantee of habeas corpus within the United States Constitution, but it says that habeas corpus can be suspended.
Right.
So if it can be suspended, that means it exists. It's almost a law greater than the Constitution.
Oh, yeah.
It's an automatic guarantee. If you're going to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, you're going to have habeas corpus and the ability to be, at a minimum, if you're arrested, to face your accusers.
Or just to be lawfully charged.
Absolutely.
Jesus Christ, what they're talking about is, you know, I can torture your mom in order to get you to bear false testimony against somebody else that I want to put on trial, and I can use your testimony while you know that I'm pushing bamboo shoots under your mother's fingernails.
It's one of the great failures of this administration in this situation in the quote unquote so-called war on terror is any belief or any idea that torture yields anything that's useful. You know, someone's going to tell you beat somebody up enough, they're going to tell you they took the Lindbergh baby.
Yep,
you know?
Sure.
And I mean, what was it? What was the name of the guy? I wrote an essay about this. The one whose name, if you read it out phonetically, said "I'm a shaky alibi," was one of the guys who was instrumental in helping us fill our heads with the ideas about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
Oh my God, Shalabi?
No. Well, Shalabi's a whole different story. This guy's, I can't remember his name, but if you read his name out phonetically without the proper Arabic, with the accents is the word I'm digging for, it sounded like "I'm a shaky alibi."
I'm drawing a blank on that one myself. All I can think about is Ahmed Shalabi.
But they tortured this guy. They tortured this guy, and he told them that there was all, this was the guy who said we were going to blow up the Brooklyn Bridge and got everybody running around.
Yeah.
If you torture someone, they're going to tell you anything.
Oh, sure. They will even tell you when you hold up four fingers that you're really holding up five.
Mm-hmm. I wrote an essay about that, too.
Yeah. So it's astonishing, though. I had no idea. I knew back in 98, 99, like a lot of people did, that the worst choice that the Republicans could possibly come up with would be George Bush as president. But I didn't think that it was because he was an incipient Nazi or fascist or Stalinist would probably be.
Stalin is the word that I've been kicking around.
Probably
popped that
be
off
better.
On DU the other day. I said, put away your Hitler things. This guy is Stalin.
Yeah,
he's
that's
doing
what
everything
become.
He's doing to augment his power.
Yeah, I thought he would be an incompetent freak. I thought he would last 4 years.
Well, he was until something happened.
Yeah, until all
of a
sudden.
Have you ever seen that long list? Somebody put it out. It used to be up on BuzzFlash. Jerry Politics on Bushwatch had this magnificent list of all of the headlines from all of the papers that were coming out on September 10th, 2001, which was a Monday. This guy was getting eviscerated for his faith-based stuff, for the tax cuts, for everything. And Newsweek was getting ready to deploy a cover story about the nonsense that went into the Bush v. Gore decision. I mean,
and his popularity ratings were heading for the 40s.
He was absolutely drowning.
Yeah.
And then
all of a sudden,
best thing that ever happened to him. It's a terrible thing to say, but it is the absolute voodoo truth.
Yeah, it is. And of course, one of the big debates going on, certainly in the internet community, is how that happened and why that happened, the attack on this country on September 11th, 2001. I've said before that, you know, I cannot accept the official version. I don't know what happened. I don't know that I'll ever know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a memo put in front of you that says, you know, months prior to the attack, that says bin Laden determined to strike in the United States.
Using the word kidnapping.
Yeah, and you ignore the memo. And then, by God, within a month, the official story, bin Laden does strike, or somebody strikes. At the very least, the incompetence of this administration has cost the lives of so many people. This is astonishing, Will. I swear to God.
Well, the title that I wanted to use for this book is one of the essays that's in the book. It's called Incompetent Design, and it makes the argument that it is, to my mind, to no small degree, a fallacy and a shortcut to thinking to go around saying that these guys are incompetent. It was the drumbeat during the midterm elections. And I mean, it was effective and it certainly helped. But these guys are not incompetent. They went into Iraq with the full intention of being there forever. And everything that makes it harder for them to leave serves their purposes and lines the pockets of the individuals who are getting paid for us being there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not incompetence.
Yeah, no, it is. I like that. Incompetent design as opposed to intelligent design. I want to ask you, we've got to take a break here, but I want to ask you, coming back, your take on the surge, this newest tactic by the Bush crime family to send in another 22,000 Americans into this abattoir that is Iraq. You can guess my position, but I can guess yours, but
it's really nice to be back on your show, Mike. It's a lot of fun.
It is indeed. Stick around. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk. We're talking to Will Rivers Pitt. His new book is House of Ill Repute: Reflections on War, Lies, and America's Ravaged Reputation. And it's out there by Polypoint Press. For God's sake, get this book, okay? It's a collection of 33 of Will's essays. And as most of you know who have been following Will Pitt or reading his stuff, he is one of the most intense voices out there right now talking about the Bush crime family. Please get it. House of Ill Repute. We'll be back in a second. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I support the troops, my friend, so I drive an SUV. In honor of those brave young souls who died to give the right to me. You know gasoline ain't free.
It's about 10 before the hour. We're talking with Will Rivers Pitt, who has put together a new book, House of Ill Repute: Reflections on War, Lies, and America's Ravaged Reputation. It's published by Polypoint Press, and you can get it at however you get it. By the way, where do folks do get it? Do they have to go online to get it, Will?
No, it's in Barnes & Noble. It's in all the bookstores, as far as I know. I saw it in the B&N up the street the other day.
Well, it just came out, right?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well,
it popped up on Amazon a few weeks ago, but I think it just hit the bookstores.
Well, again, for people who are familiar with Will's writings from Truth Out, from DU, wherever he's written online, you should have this book. It's something you hold in your hand, and it's 33 of these essays all put together. What about the surge, Will? What's your take on Bush?
I think it's going to be the same disaster that the rest of it has been. This is, you know, quick bow to Keith Olbermann for having a lone voice of sanity in the mainstream media.
Really?
Pointed out the other day that there have been four different surges since this whole thing began. Mm-hmm. This isn't anything new. This isn't a new idea. They simply failed to advertise it the last couple of times they've done it. I am at an absolute loss to think my way out of this. The situation there has deteriorated to such a degree. It is an out-and-out sectarian, religious, grudge-match civil war. I cobbled together, when I was working for Progressive Democrats of America, a couple of, you know, broad sketch ideas on how to get started on it. And even now, the situation has moved beyond those fairly common sense ideas. I don't know how we get out of this, but I do know that sending more people into the machine isn't going to get it done.
As gruesome as it sounds, I don't see where there's any choice. If we are determined to get out of this, there has to be a day when American troops, when that first American troop gets on that first transport plane out of there, and that is a withdrawal. That is, they can call it whatever they want. It is obviously true to, I think, those of us who still have a brain left, that what has developed in Iraq is, we call it a civil war. I think you label it even more clearly. It's a religious upheaval between two sectors of Islam who literally condemn each other to hell.
And it's a relatively new thing. There are a lot of people who will say these people have hated each other for thousands of years. The Shiites and Sunnis, specifically in Iraq, have banded together on more than a few occasions.
Right.
Back in late 2003, early 2004, they teased out an idea to come together to attempt to throw back the American occupation. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the most dangerous moments. And it wouldn't surprise me if we worked very hard to try to break that up, because that would have been a calamity for us.
Mm-hmm.
But the Shiites and Sunnis in Iraq have not, this isn't one of those 5,000-year-old grudge matches. It's within the last 30 years where the minority Sunnis were putting the boot heel on the neck of the majority Shiites with our funding and direct aid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of any number of a dozen calamities coming out of the end of the Cold War.
Well, when you look at how many regimes, non-democratic regimes we back in the Middle East that are in fact Sunni, it's astonishing to think that we, well, it's not astonishing. We are pretending to back a Shia regime that, given a chance, if Afghanistan or Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran, and Iraq can do what I think the Shia leaders would like to do, and that is this huge alliance. And I'm not one to think that there is that the Islamists want to kill us all. I don't believe that at all. I think some of the Christianists want to kill us all, but I don't think the Islamists want to kill us all. They have their idea of what constitutes proper living. But what
they
Bush
want to kill us out of their backyard is what they
yeah,
want.
Yeah, there
to do.
You go. What Bush has done, my God, he's more or less put together. First of all, the Islamic Republic of Iraq that is just going to blend with that in Iran, which is going to blend with the Taliban, which is going to blend with Pakistan once they get rid of Musharraf.
Well, my favorite part about that speech the other day, I mean, everyone kind of wigged out when he threw that gauntlet down towards Iran and Syria. I'm still not sold on the idea that these guys are going to go attack either of those countries, because we're not necessarily gamed up for it. That's a longer story. But he started condemning the Sunni insurgents, and we have to help the Shia government, while out of the other side of his mouth, condemning Iran. The Shia government in Iraq is a creature of Dawa and Siri, two Iranian, used to be, I mean, they're political parties now, but they used to be serious terrorist organizations. These were the guys that killed the Marines in Beirut.
Right.
They're running things in Iraq.
Right.
So to side with the Shiites and condemn the Sunnis while throwing down a gauntlet on Iran, it's. There was a story in the paper the other day about, I think it was the Bob Woodward book, talking about somebody giving a briefing to George W. Bush, trying to explain late in the game, like 3 years after the war started, the difference between Shia and Sunni.
Yeah, he had no idea.
Well, his reaction was, but I thought they were all Muslims.
Christ, I can't, you know, I have to laugh so that I don't cry and scream and rend my garments.
Put your head through the wall, yeah.
Oh, my God. And part of the reason that we are in such a horrendous situation there is because of the fact that there's nobody making policy in this country who give a tinker's damn about history, whether it is the history of the area or the history of these conflicts or the history of how these countries were put together after World War One. These
or
are
the
not
history of our democracy in the process.
Yeah, exactly. These are not countries. The Iranians should hate us. We overthrew their government in 1953 and forced the Shah down their throats.
Mm-hmm.
The Iraqis should hate us. We put Saddam in power, who then spent the next 25 years torturing and murdering and beating people into bloody masses of flesh. It's amazing to me how our foreign policy, especially under the neocons, is so devoid of any kind of historical sense at all, and that's
really
where the problem is.
I would be really interested. I'd wish that I could go back in a time machine and reorganize what happened in 2000 to have a smart, articulate, policy-oriented individual deal with these problems, because they're huge problems. Over the course of the Cold War, it wasn't about choosing between right and wrong. It was choosing the wrong that was more right.
That's true. And the
moral equivalency was, well, we're better than the Soviets and we're defeating communism, and that's a whole other bag of nonsense. But this is an incredibly complicated, dangerous world. I mean, these guys make it seem like we're all going to blow up any second now and get your plastic sheeting and duct tape, but it is a dangerous, complicated world.
And we'll all be okay. Will, good to talk with you. The name of the book is House of Ill Repute. Go get it. Will,
Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate it. Have a good night, man.
We'll talk again. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. It's always good to talk with Will. We've been kind of out of touch lately. The book, again, is House of Ill Repute, Reflections on War, Lies, and America's Ravaged Reputation, with a foreword by Cindy Sheehan, published by Polypoint Press, 33 essays by Will that you need to reread. All right, a couple of things here. First of all, the Chinese space weapons test, a couple of folks have written in about where that technology came from, and let me just share you what Gary wrote in. Mike, don't forget that the technology for this weapon was supplied by Lockheed Martin. Conveniently, they are the number one weapons supplier in the world. Now I have to wonder, who would benefit from an escalation of the arms race? Certainly, we need now to respond with new, quote, defensive, close quote, weapons, systems of our own. I know, maybe we could contract with Lockheed Martin. And what he's referring to, of course, was that in 2000, Lockheed agreed to pay a $13 million settlement for breaching the Arms Export Control Act. Now, a lot of right-wingers tried to blame this on Clinton. It had nothing to do with Clinton. It had to do with these Republican corporate thugs who are no more loyal to the United States than they're loyal to anybody, any place, anywhere, anytime, for any reason. Wherever the money is where you will find these sons of bitches. If it means selling out American security, they don't care. Of course they'll do it. The company passed information to AsiaSat, a major shareholder of which is the Chinese government. And in May of 2000, Lockheed Martin sold Lockheed Martin Control Systems to BAE Systems. In November 2000, Lockheed completed the sale of its aerospace electronic systems to BAE Systems. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on. It's just unbelievable how corporate America will sell anything in this country, families, children, freedom, medical care, anything. They don't care. They just don't care. And the stockholders of these companies ought to burn in hell. They really should. I mean, anybody who holds stock in Lockheed Martin tonight, shame on you. Shame on you. You consider yourself a patriot? Get rid of the stock. Dump it. Push the company into bankruptcy. These are killers, and they're traitors to the United States. Never mind. Pam in Phoenix wrote in, Mike, I agree with you fully. Impeachment is the only way. It must happen. It isn't a choice. It isn't a decision. It is the mandate of our Constitution. And those who refuse to abide with this mandate and face the long road of the duty of their oath have cooperated with fascism. Gandhi said non-cooperation with evil is a duty. And the British rule of India was evil. Today, one may easily say that non-cooperation with evil is a duty and that corporate fascism is evil. Torture and laws which make it possible are evil. The suspension of habeas corpus is an evil, and those who tolerate the suspension are cooperating with evil, and so on. The fundamental question we face today is this, Pam writes, will we as Democrats cooperate with corporate fascism or not? And that's why I get so angry and vocal about the Democratic Party leadership. Come on. Come on. Jack wrote in, Mike, my wife and I live up here in Northeast Philly, about 5 minutes from the National Guard Armory. Considering we're at war, the facility's parking lot is filled with military vehicles, mostly trucks and jeeps. I don't want to seem too paranoid, but contrast this to last summer when the lot was virtually empty. Mike, I wouldn't put anything past this administration. They may very well try to hold on to power for as long as they choose, and if they do try to institute martial law, it ain't going to be televised. Yeah, it just seems to me, I think what Jack is referring to, what I said earlier, that the stage is being set here for martial law. Now, Will just said he really, at this point, doesn't put a lot of credence on the idea of invading Iran or Syria. Okay, I probably put more credence on the idea than Will does. But I tell you what, let's listen. We found this interview now. SK, thanks, sent it to us. Seymour Hersh in New Yorker magazine, who's probably one of the, if not the top, unbought, uncontrolled investigative journalist in the United States right now, who has incredible contacts within the intelligence community, within the military establishment that has not become horrors for George W. Bush or the neocons. Seymour Hersh and Wolf Blitzer. And I believe it starts with Wolf, or does it start with Seymour? It starts with Wolf. Let's listen to this.
How close, based on your reporting, is Iran to actually building a having a nuclear weapon?
Far away.
When you say far away, be precise.
There's a new report that's the CIA, a new assessment. And the CIA, by the way, has really become, under Mr. Hayden, is getting much more vital. They've done a very good analysis of the Israeli war in Lebanon that hasn't been made public yet. They've done a new analysis that's probably maybe part of a national intelligence estimate soon.
You're talking about General Michael Hayden, the new CIA director.
Well, the stuff coming out of it, from what I gather, is really much more to the point.
So what's the conclusion as far as how much time the world has before Iran actually has a bomb?
The new study didn't say that. What it said is that we do a lot of very good things. We have tremendous people in the field, tremendous capability. We can do things that I don't write about and nobody should write about. We do very good technical things. And we can't find, the new assessment says, we cannot find, the CIA says there's no evidence that Iran is doing anything that puts them close to a bomb. There's no secret program of significant bomb making.
The Israelis have a different assessment.
Absolutely.
They think the Iranians may be within a year of getting to the threshold of having a point of no return, if you will, from having a bomb. When I was there in July, I had briefings. That's what they suggested.
They've been saying that, for 5 or 10 years, 1 year. The fact is the Israelis have come up with new human intelligence. I write about this in the article, sort of the counter, the CIA assessment. They've come up with an agent inside Iran. They have more than one. And they have, this agent is who has been reliable, so the Israelis claim in the past, who now says that the Iranians are secretly working on making an actual trigger for a bomb, even though they may not have any specific evidence. We don't have any specific evidence of a facility where they're doing this work. The Israelis say, yes, they are. They're getting ready to start detonating a weapon once they get the fissile material, the enriched material. Now, that information is being handled pretty much by the White House and various offices in the Pentagon. And the CIA isn't getting a good look at the Israeli intelligence. It's the old word stovepiping. It's the president and the vice president is pretty much being kept in the White House.
They'd like to get more access to this Israeli agent. Is that what you're saying?
Well, of course, the people in the CIA want to know who he is. They want to know, obviously, but they certainly want to know what other evidence does he have of actual making a warhead. This is the internecine war fight that's going on. The same fight, by the way, we had before Iraq.
In the new article, which I read last.
Okay, that's all we have. What Seymour Hersh is saying there, if you see, watch the video, Seymour Hersh believes such an Israeli agent exists inside Iran the same way I believe there's a Santa Claus. And Wolf Blitzer, who obviously is a Mossad agent, always has been, always will be. When Blitzer was the Washington correspondent for the Jerusalem Post, everybody in Washington knew his ties to the Israeli Mossad. And he still maintains them. I can remember when I came back from Chicago and went to work for CNN International, it was explained to me that there were four agents of the CIA working now at CNN, and also a couple of Israeli intelligence agents. And, who could that be? So, you know, when Blitzer sits there and talks with Seymour Hersh, and Blitzer expresses, makes the statement that he made, well, but the Israelis have a different point of view. I mean, Seymour Hersh is saying there's no there. U.S. intelligence, the good intelligence, the untampered with intelligence. And then Seymour tries to explain, I guess you caught it, that the White House is going with the imaginary Israeli Mossad agent, and the CIA is going with what they know to be the truth. But this is how it works. Once again, the Israeli government is attempting to dictate U.S. foreign policy where it concerns Iran. I just hope to hell that the Seymour Hershes overcome the Wolf Blitzers.
I want to live in a country that's safe, in a land that's clean and free, for every color and culture, every person, every belief. Your greed, your fear, and your lies.
Dictatorship seem orderly. When one man makes all the decisions, there is no need for negotiation or compromise.
A lot of fervor behind those words, huh, you little bastard? 21 past the hour. Let's do some phone calls, please. Joe is calling from Miami. Joe, thanks for your patience. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you doing today?
Doing all right.
Let me give you an idea of what this cold-blooded killer in the White House is trying to do with this surge.
All right.
Like you said, huge profits being made with Carlyle Group, Bechtel, and all on the supply of the military equipment. Mm-hmm. Also, they haven't got the oil up to $100 a barrel yet. If you notice, it's dropped back to 50. They're shaking out the unconnected, and the Saudis haven't cut any oil production, so they know it's going back up. Now, what he's got a problem is Iraq is a total mess right now, and he's got no support from the American people. So you ever heard the term tripwire?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, that's what he's doing. He's putting these troops in harm's way, hoping that he can entice the insurgents to attack and have to battle in Baghdad and kill about 100 to 200 American troops in one day. And the average dumb American would demand revenge to turn the support around back in support of the war. This bloody son of a SOB, that's what he's up to.
Well, you're probably right. Nancy Pelosi's statement that the White House says is poisonous pretty much said the same thing, that what Bush is doing is using our soldiers for a political end, and I think the political end is exactly what you're talking
about.
Let
me make a point, too, about the difference between senators. Take Hagel and McCain. Hagel was a ground soldier in Vietnam. He knows what it is to have your buddy blowing up next to you and pick his brains off your helmet.
Right.
McCain was flying at 25,000 feet, an air-conditioned fighter, in a sanitized war. And the thing is, after he dropped his bombs, he went back to his carrier, got off his plane, had a nice hot shower, ate his steak and eggs dinner, and took a nice long nap. So that's why he's interested in foot soldiers. He doesn't know what it is to fight a war.
Until they shot him down.
Right. Well, hey, he turned that into becoming a senator. If it wasn't for that, he would have been just some pilot for some airline or something.
Well, that's...
Take care, my man.
All right. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate you checking in. Let's see. LaShonda is calling from Austin. LaShonda, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How about you? How's the baby?
He is home.
He's home?
He is home. I just left out of the room with him.
How's he doing?
He is doing great. He had to come home on oxygen, but that's okay. He's got a couple of months left on it.
Uh-huh.
So he's doing good. He's almost 7 pounds now.
Does he keep you up all night, or?
Yes, he does.
Welcome to that world.
Right. I can't wait till the colds come.
Oh, no. Trust me. Once your son starts getting colds, so will you.
Yeah, I know.
having a kid is an absolute assault on your immune system. So just get ready for it, okay?
All righty. Okay. Well, I was calling tonight. I wanted to make 2 points. The first one I wanted to bring up, you were saying about the 30% of the country that's still following him behind Bush. I just can't understand that. I'm like, yo, I wouldn't follow him to the liquor store, let alone listen to what he got to say as far as, like, public policy and foreign policy. It's just ridiculous. And the second thing I wanted to say, I'm not sure. I guess the protests are going on next week, is it, where everybody's going to be
out? The 27th, yeah, in D.C., right.
Okay. Well, I, if you don't mind, I would just like to say something to your callers and listeners. Right now, this is the most crucial time that we have, you know, before these people start trying to implement what their final solution is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I noticed when I used to go to the protests, I don't go anymore, but I would see people there with, like, several different signs for all kinds of different causes. And, you know, I'm like, liberals, I love you, but come on now. We not going to march for chickens getting their behind kicked by KFC. Mm-hmm. We're not going to march, you know, for the environment. We're going after the war on democracy. And, you know, this is not a time to come out, you know, with your causes. I mean, yeah, I know if you feel passionate about whales, that's fine. Go arrange another protest. But this is about everything that's going on. And it just upsets me so. It's like, you know, we can't even get a united front because you got people out here, you know, with other agendas. And this is not what this is about. This is strictly about trying to, you know, get the president impeached, whatever it takes to get these fools out of office. So.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, LaShonda, and I completely agree with you. The demonstrations prior to this war that were designed to try to stop the war before it began had so many issues involved, and the anti-war movement has become so fractionalized. There's so many people who, you know, they want to talk about Mumia. They want to talk about the Palestinian issue. They want to talk about Native Americans that are being helped. All these are legitimate issues that have their constituencies. But this time, I agree with you. I just wish everybody that showed up would be focused on the single most important issue facing this generation, and that's to get this evil son of a bitch out of office. Hey, hold on a second, LaShonda. You want to hold on a minute?
Sure, I'll hold on.
All right, hold on just a second, and we'll chat a little bit more when we come back. This is Nova M. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I think we are welcomed, but it was not a peaceful welcome.
Oh, really? All right, back to LaShonda. To recap, I certainly agree with you. There's got to be some focus, LaShonda. We can't have several hundred thousand people there who have to stand and listen to all these other issues. Damn it, this fool has got to be removed from office. And if it takes millions of people in the streets to give the Democrats some backbone, then that's what it's going to take.
And like I said, I haven't been to a protest probably in about a year or so, but it really used to upset me. And I would see these people, and, you know, I would also think, well, maybe these are some COINTELPRO people from the FBI out here just, you know, causing distractions. And then I'm like, you know, no, I don't think, you know, all these people with signs, you know, are working for the government.
Right.
And it just
you
really
get crazy. You get crazy
out
after a while, don't you?
You do. You start thinking everything is a conspiracy. Prices at the grocery store.
I know everything. It's just insane. It would be funny if it weren't so damn serious. You know what I'm saying?
It is. You know, and I just want to say, you know, one last thing. If we can, you know, present, you know, next week, everybody can get out in the street. I know people go out to the protest and then, you know, they're all charged up and then it's kind of like the momentum falls. And I just kind of have a suggestion. What I've been doing is, I've been talking to basically people. I'll ask them, you know, hey, what you think going on? And, you know, we'll start talking. And my husband and I came up with an idea of doing like a quote unquote conspiracy cookout where we just invite all of our friends over, you know, who kind of want to know what's going on, get them some birthday hats wrapped in tinfoil, tell them, here's your tinfoil hat and hot dog. Now you sit down and listen to see what I got to say. So, I mean, that's just a suggestion.
That's good. I like that. Hey, LaShonda, it's always good to hear from you. Kiss the baby for us, okay?
All righty, Mike. Y'all have a good night.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
John is calling from Sacramento. Hey, John. Welcome to the program.
What's up, Mike?
You are.
Okay. Hey, about those detainees when you're talking at the beginning of the program.
Yes.
You saying, you know, where they're coming from. I heard somewhere that they were paying $5,000 per detainee to some warlords out in Afghanistan.
I know from what I've read from reliable sources that an inordinate number of these people who are have been held by us in Guantanamo and other secret bases around the world are people who, like you say, have been scooped up and sold to the American intelligence community in Afghanistan or Iraq or wherever. And that is beyond evil. You know what I'm saying? That's beyond evil. That's somewhere out there around. I don't know. It's demonic.
Hey, well, a couple more things. Gonzalez is between a hard rock and between a rock and a hard place. No doubt, he's like a cockroach, twiggling his little feet. You know, he doesn't know where to go.
Only when he's under oath and is being questioned by someone who won't take his BS for an answer. But I think Gonzalez thinks he's in the catbird seat. He doesn't have to worry. He's part of the ruling class. He can do whatever he wants to do. He can say the Constitution doesn't exist or the parts of it that he doesn't want to exist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And the last point I wanted to make was just that, you know, I can't believe we just let these monkeys in the office and then, you know, they're doing as they will. Americans need to wake up and smell the Constitution before it's gone.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I couldn't agree more with you about the defecation on the Constitution. It's been going on and going on, and, you know, when is the cup going to get filled?
I know, and I've said so many times, either on this program or to my own self, you know, just when I wander around the house muttering to myself, what's it going to take? For, I mean, what does this gang have to do before the Democrats, who are now in power, say that's enough and go after him? What the hell does he have to do? And if that's attacking Pelosi or attacking Reid, then the intent of that statement is being misunderstood. You know, the Constitution demands that this bastard be removed from office for what he's done. It's
absolutely, it's long overdue. And one last quick point. That 30% number is BS, okay? It's more like 15%, but they have a way of making it sound like, you know, like it's double. But I'm guaranteeing you that it doesn't go beyond 15%. And it's all the cronies and the people that are behind all this madness.
Yeah, I hear you.
Have a good night, Mike.
All right, John, thanks. Appreciate you checking in. Will is calling from Michigan. Hey, Will. Where's Will? There's Will.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
I talked with one of Senator Levin's aides today, and I was complaining about this non-binding resolution that they're working on.
Yes.
And I said, why aren't they working on something with some legal teeth to it?
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, basically, The defense appropriations are tied up until the end of the fiscal year, and they can't really do anything about it.
Well, that's kind of defense appropriations are tied up until the end of this fiscal year, so there's nothing they can do about it. I don't believe for a second that that's true, and I'll tell you why. If whatever has been appropriated did not take into consideration another 22,000 troops, and the 40 or 50,000 people needed to support them, if they were assuming they were all combat troops, which obviously they're not going to be.
Right.
But every appropriation that the Bush thugs have gotten for this war after the initial surge has been an emergency appropriation, so-called.
Right.
So I can't believe that they're telling you that.
Well, it's what they're saying. What I called you about was your discussion.
Well, let me ask you: when you're told that, do you come back at him and say, you know, you're lying to me, or that's not true,
I didn't really have the ammunition to back those statements up.
Yeah.
I need to look into it further.
Okay.
I called because you were talking about Gonzalez and his interpretation of habeas corpus.
Mm-hmm.
And to quote the Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2 says, "The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion the public safety may require it."
Right.
Now, if I go to Webster and look up the word privilege, it says, "A right, immunity, or benefit enjoyed only by a person beyond the advantages of most," as mm-hmm. opposed to a right, which is that which is due to anyone by just claim, legal guarantee, moral principle, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So he's playing word games with the kind of,
oh, sure.
Not that I agree with what he's doing, but you know, based on that interpretation, he's right.
Well, but you can't have a constitutional prohibition against suspending habeas corpus except in two instances, without presupposing or making the very clear realization, I don't want to say assumption, that such a right does exist. And not only does it exist, if the Constitution prohibits suspending it, then by definition it exists. So Gonzalez is crazier than a loon. And not only that,
I'm not questioning that he's not questioning whether it exists or not. He's saying that it's not a right, which, according to the wording of the Constitution, it's not a right. It's a privilege.
Well, okay, I see what you're saying, but that's like to me, that's like saying if somebody is beaten up and their money is taken on the street, that's not a mugging, it's a beating.
Right.
So, you know, the hell with that.
Well, what blows his argument totally out of the water is that habeas corpus is mentioned in Article 1, which defines the powers and limitations of Congress,
right,
not the executive branch.
Well, the bottom line for me, and I'm sure it is for you and for most Americans that can still think, is to get these sons of bitches out of office.
That's right.
One way or the other. I hope it's done legally and peacefully. Got to leave it there. Will, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
No problem.
All right, sir. Take care. And by the way, I just got a couple of emails about what's going on at WhiteRoseSociety.org, upon whom we have depended for a number of years on this program, no matter who we were working for, whether it was IE America, Air America, or now Nova M. They're having a fundraiser, and I just went to their website. Ben is trying to raise $10,000. And Jesus God, he started December 8th. Here we are 6 weeks later, and it's the little indicator's not going up too much. Now, I haven't hit on you people for any money for a long time. And Tim in Danbury, Connecticut, sent me. He's one of the people that wrote to me. I haven't hit on you for a long time, so I'm going to hit on you now. go to WhiteRoseSociety.org, please. Please do this and make a $10 donation or $50 or $100 or $1,000, whatever you got. Will you do that? Thanks. I appreciate it. We'll be right back.
Do you know their names? Can you play their games without losing track and coming down a bit too hard? Oh, maybe I'll be there.
Isn't that a song from the 60s, 70s? That's a redo, isn't it? Speaking of songs, so many of the people listening to this program are musicians and put out CDs. It's pretty incredible. We've gotten so many CDs in here, and we appreciate all the music. I wish there was some way we could play it all. Or even a part of it, but it's difficult. One of the CDs we got, I got it today and I listened to it tonight. You guys have heard John from Las Vegas, who calls in the piano tuner. He has a CD out that he sent us a copy. And, whew, I mean, this guy is really good. Kind of piano jazz kind of thing. There's a couple that have some vocals on it. I guess that's John singing. And really good stuff. We appreciate the fact that you folks do send us some music, and we try to use it occasionally. I wish we were ASCAP or BMI licensed. If we were, hell, we would, you know, we'd devote a whole evening. Why not? You know, to playing music with a little bit of talk thrown in, bumper talk instead of bumper music. But this program is not ASCAP or BMI licensed, and it's not fair to just endlessly play somebody else's music without paying those writers' royalties, and we're real aware of that. Anyway, thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight, answered your calls, our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota, Mark Marshall, our webmaster, the moderators at MikeMalloy.com, Ben Birch, White Rose Society. Please go to his website and make a small donation or a large donation or a huge donation. Okay, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben has busted his hump to bring progressive talk, not just this program, all kinds of programs, not just this network, all kinds of networks. I haven't hit on you for money for a long time, but this is a direct plea to make a contribution at WhiteRoseSociety.org. You got to do it. You got to do it. Well, you don't got to do it, but please do it. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Send them some money. Who did I leave off? I guess that's it. Our executive producer is Catherine Bay. Back to your phone calls. John is calling from Oakland. John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, well, I just want to respond.
John, let me interrupt for a second. I get a lot of comments about you because you do make some very definite observations, but Jesus, man, you get around a lot. You know, one night you're in Columbus, next night you're in Oakland, next night you're in New York.
I'm on vacation right now, Mike.
You are? You're on vacation?
Yeah, okay. I'm visiting out here on the coast.
Oh, okay. You have such a distinct way of talking, and a lot of people pay attention to what you say, but I do get emails to say, Jesus, that guy gets around a lot.
Well, it's it's usually from Ohio. But at any rate, Mike,
right.
I think people who are making excuses for the Democrats right now, the number two party of war, and I do believe that the Democrats are the greatest asset the Republicans really have, because, as I say, they're playing a kind of a tandem game with the Republicans, bad cop, worse cop. And they've got to somehow try to schmooze and pacify the mass anti-war sentiment of their ranks. But when it comes down to it, they're actually as Reid and Pelosi have said, ruling out, hitting the ground immediately. We don't have to wait what they're going to do. They've said they're going to rule out impeachment. They're going to rule out cutting off the funds for this dirty genocidal war. They're not reversing their votes for this Fascist Patriot Act or the Military Commissions Act. You know, it's all hot air. It's all rhetoric. And I think until people begin to stop making excuses, you know, I vote for third parties like WSWS.org or Workers.org because I've found out over the years, going back to the Vietnam War, that even when Johnson was driven from power, Democrats, the leading Democrats, were saying we can't get out of Vietnam. We've got to stay there. It's going to be chaos. It's going to be right. The rest of it. And they used that sloganeering to kill 3 million more people and in complicity with the Nixon administration while they quibbled and carped over small trifles and tactics. And they're doing the same thing right now. And if you're going to say that for criticizing the Democrats for being complicit in this war by not doing nothing to stop it and ruling out the things that will stop it, impeachment and cutting off the funds. Well, that's complicity with the Republicans, and it really amounts to saying that the Republicans who are always going to be there, all of the Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reillys, the rest of them on 1,500 stations around the clock, the Glenn Beck slime balls, yeah, are always going to be there carping and criticizing. And if the Democrats apologists will use that as their permanent infinite pretext for not doing anything, well, then they've got this handy little pretext for never really doing anything to stop this war. And I think that, if we're talking about COINTELPRO and diverted issues, you know, the number one issue of the electorate, according to the exit polls, by far was rapid and immediate withdrawal. The Iraqi people say the same thing. Even the soldiers, 72% of them, according to a Zoghbi poll 2 years ago, said they wanted out before now. And even though they believe the lies that Bush told them, they still said they wanted out. But here we've got Reid and Pelosi saying we're not going to cut off the funds, playing Bush's game, saying that sending them deeper into hell is the way to support them, rather than using this money to safely evacuate them. They know perfectly well that this has nothing to do with supporting the troops.
Well, that's true. Hey, listen, John, we're out of time, and I appreciate what you had to say. Thanks a lot.
Thank you
for checking in. We'll talk again, John, I'm sure. Thanks to everybody for participating tonight and this week. However you did that, I do appreciate it. I'll see you Monday night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are.